It's no use.
Do you mean because of that alliance agreement that you signed? It won't hold. This is plain expropriation. No court will uphold it. And if Jim tries to hide behind the usual looter's slogan of public welfare, I'll go on the stand and swear that Taggart Transcontinental can't handle the whole traffic of Colorado. And if any court rules against you, you can appeal and keep on appealing for the next 10 years.
Yes, he said, I could. I'm not sure I'd win, but I could try, and I could hang on to the railroad for a few years longer, but... No, it's not the legal points that I'm thinking about, one way or the other. It's not that.
What, then?
I don't want to fight it, Dagny.
She looked at him incredulously. It was the one sentence which she felt sure he had never uttered before. A man could not reverse himself so late in life.
Dan Conway was approaching 50. He had the square, stolid, stubborn face of a tough freight engineer rather than a company president, the face of a fighter, with a young, tanned skin and graying hair. He had taken over a shaky little railroad in Arizona, a road whose net revenue was less than that of a successful grocery store, and he had built it into the best railroad of the Southwest. He spoke little, seldom read books, had never gone to college. The whole sphere of human endeavors, with one exception, left him blankly indifferent. He had no touch of that which people called culture, but he knew railroads.
Why don't you want to fight?
Because they had the right to do it.
Dan, she asked, have you lost your mind?
I've never gone back on my word in my life, he said tonelessly. I don't care what the courts decide. I promise to obey the majority. I have to obey.
Did you expect the majority to do this to you?
No. There was a kind of faint convulsion in the stolid face. He spoke softly, not looking at her, the helpless astonishment still raw within him. No, I didn't expect it. I heard them talking about it for over a year, but I didn't believe it. Even when they were voting, I didn't believe it.
What did you expect?
I thought. They said all of us were to stand for the common good. I thought what I had done down there in Colorado was good, good for everybody.
Oh, you damn fool, don't you see that that's what you're being punished for? Because it was good?
He shook his head. I don't understand it, he said, but I see no way out.
Did you promise them to agree to destroy yourself?
There doesn't seem to be any choice for any of us.
What do you mean?
Dagny, the whole world's in a terrible state right now. I don't know what's wrong with it, but something's very wrong. Men have to get together and find a way out, but who's to decide which way to take unless it's the majority? I guess that's the only fair method of deciding. I don't see any other. I suppose somebody's got to be sacrificed. If it turned out to be me, I have no right to complain. The right's on their side. Men have to get together.
She made an effort to speak calmly. She was trembling with anger. If that's the price of getting together, then I'll be damned if I want to live on the same earth with any human beings. If the rest of them can survive only by destroying us, then why should we wish them to survive? Nothing can make self-immolation proper. Nothing can give them the right to turn men into sacrificial animals. Nothing can make it moral to destroy the best. One can't be punished for being good. One can't be penalized for ability. If that is right, then we'd better start slaughtering one another, because there isn't any right at all in the world.
He did not answer.
He looked at her helplessly. If it's that kind of world, how can we live in it? She asked.
I don't know, he whispered.
Dan, do you really think it's right? In all truth, deep down, do you think it's right?
He closed his eyes. No, he said. Then he looked at her, and she saw a look of torture for the first time. That's what I've been sitting here trying to understand. I know that I ought to think it's right, but I can't. It's as if my tongue wouldn't turn to say it. I keep seeing every tie of the track down there, every signal light, every bridge, every night that I spent when... His head dropped down on his arms. Oh, God, it's so damn unjust.
Dan, she said through her teeth, fight it.
He raised his head. His eyes were empty.
No, he said. It would be wrong. I'm just selfish.
Oh, damn that rotten tripe! You know better than that!
I don't know. His voice was very tired. I've been sitting here trying to think about it. I don't know what is right anymore. He added, I don't think I care.
She knew suddenly that all further words were useless, and that Dan Conway would never be a man of action again. She did not know what made her certain of it. She said, wondering, You've never given up in the face of a battle before.
No, I guess I haven't.
He spoke with a quiet, indifferent astonishment.
I've fought storms and floods and rock slides and rail fissure. I knew how to do it, and I like doing it. But this kind of battle, it's one I can't fight.
Why?
I don't know. Who knows why the world is what it is? Oh, who is John Galt?
She winced. Then what are you going to do?
I don't know.
I mean,
she stopped.
He knew what she meant.
Oh, there's always something to do.
He spoke without conviction.
I guess it's only Colorado and New Mexico that they're going to declare restricted. I'll still have the line in Arizona to run. He added, as it was 20 years ago. Well, it will keep me busy. I'm getting tired, Dagny. I didn't take time to notice it, but I guess I am.
She could say nothing.
I'm not going to build a line through one of their blighted areas, he said in the same indifferent voice. That's what they tried to hand me for a consolation prize. But I think it's just talk. You can't build a railroad where there's nothing for hundreds of miles but a couple of farmers who are not grown enough to feed themselves. You can't build a road and make it pay. If you don't make it pay, who's going to? It doesn't make sense to me. They just didn't know what they were saying.
Oh, to hell with their blighted areas. It's you I'm thinking about.
She had to name it.
What will you do with yourself?
I don't know. Well, there's a lot of things I haven't had time to do. Fishing, for instance. I've always liked fishing. Maybe I'll start reading books. Always meant to. Guess I'll take it easy now. Guess I'll go fishing. There's some nice places down in Arizona where it's peaceful and quiet, and you don't have to see a human being for miles.
He glanced up at her and added,
Forget it. Why should you worry about me?
It's not about you. It's... Dan, she said suddenly, I hope you know it's not for your sake that I wanted to help you fight.
He smiled. It was a faint, friendly smile. I know, he said. It's not out of pity or charity, or any ugly reason like that. Look, I intended to give you the battle of your life down there in Colorado. I intended to cut into your business and squeeze you to the wall and drive you out if necessary.
He chuckled faintly. It was appreciation.
You would have made a pretty good try at it, too, he said.
Only I didn't think it would be necessary. I thought there was enough room there for both of us.
Yes, he said, there was.
Still, if I found that there wasn't, I would have fought you. And if I could make my road better than yours, I'd have broken you, and not given a damn about what happened to you. But this...
Dan, I don't think I want to look at our Rio Norte line now. I... Oh, God. Dan, I don't want to be a looter.
He looked at her silently for a moment. It was an odd look, as if from a great distance. He said softly,
You should have been born about 100 years earlier, kid. Then you would have had a chance.
To hell with that, I intend to make my own chance.
That's what I intended at your age.
You succeeded.
Have I?
She sat still, suddenly unable to move. He sat up straight and said sharply, almost as if he were issuing orders,
You'd better look at that Rio Norte line of yours, and you'd better do it fast. Get it ready before I move out, because if you don't, that'll be the end of Ellis Wyatt and all the rest of them down there, and they're the best people left in the country. You can't let that happen. It's all on your shoulders now. It would be no use trying to explain to your brother that it's going to be much tougher for you down there without me to compete with, but you and I know it, so go to it. Whatever you do, you won't be a looter. No looter could run a railroad in that part of the country and last at it. Whatever you make down there, you will have earned it. Lice like your brother don't count anyway. It's up to you now. She sat looking at him, wondering what it was that had defeated a man of this kind. She knew that it was not James Taggart. She saw him looking at her as if he were struggling with a question mark of his own. Then he smiled, and she saw incredulously that the smile held sadness and pity.
"You'd better not feel sorry for me," he said. "I think of the two of us, it's you who have the harder time ahead, and I think you're going to get it worse than I did."
She had telephoned the mills and made an appointment to see Hank Reardon that afternoon. She had just hung up the receiver and was bending over the maps of the Rio Norte line spread on her desk when the door opened. Dagny looked up startled. She did not expect the door of her office to open without announcement. The man who entered was a stranger. He was young, tall, and something about him suggested violence, though she could not say what it was, because the first trait one grasped about him was a quality of self-control that seemed almost arrogant. He had dark eyes, disheveled hair, and his clothes were expensive, but worn as if he did not care or notice what he wore. "Ellis Wyatt," he said in self-introduction. She leapt to her feet, involuntarily. She understood why nobody had or could have stopped him in the outer office. "Sit down, Mr. Wyatt," she said, smiling.
"It won't be necessary."
He did not smile.
"I don't hold long conferences."
Slowly, taking her time by conscious intention, she sat down and leaned back, looking at him. "Well?" she asked.
"I came to see you because I understand you're the only one who's got any brains in this rotten outfit."
"What can I do for you?"
You can listen to an ultimatum."
He spoke distinctly, giving an unusual clarity to every syllable. "I expect Taggart Transcontinental 9 months from now to run trains in Colorado as my business requires them to be run. If the snide stunt you people perpetrated on the Phoenix Durango was done for the purpose of saving yourself from the necessity of effort, this is to give you notice that you will not get away with it. I made no demands on you when you could not give me the kind of service I needed. I found someone who could. Now you wish to force me to deal with you. You expect to dictate terms by leaving me no choice. You expect me to hold my business down to the level of your incompetence. This is to tell you that you have miscalculated." She said slowly with effort, "Shall I tell you what I intend to do about our service in Colorado?"
"No. I have no interest in discussions and intentions. I expect transportation. What you do to furnish it and how you do it is your problem, not mine. I am merely giving you a warning. Those who wish to deal with me must do so on my terms or not at all. I do not make terms with incompetence. If you expect to earn money by carrying the oil I produce, you must be as good at your business as I am at mine. I wish this to be understood."
She said quietly, "I understand.
I shan't waste time proving to you why you'd better take my ultimatum seriously. If you have the intelligence to keep this corrupt organization functioning at all, you have the intelligence to judge this for yourself. We both know that if Taggart Transcontinental runs trains in Colorado the way it did 5 years ago, it will ruin me. I know that that is what you people intend to do. You expect to feed off me while you can, and to find another carcass to pick dry after you have finished mine. That is the policy of most of mankind today. So here is my ultimatum. It is now in your power to destroy me. I may have to go, but if I go, I'll make sure that I take all the rest of you along with me."
Somewhere within her, under the numbness that held her still to receive the lashing, she felt a small point of pain, hot, like the pain of scalding. She wanted to tell him of the years she had spent looking for men such as he to work with. She wanted to tell him that his enemies were hers, that she was fighting the same battle. She wanted to cry to him, "I'm not one of them." But she knew that she could not do it. She bore the responsibility for Taggart Transcontinental and for everything done in its name. She had no right to justify herself now. Sitting straight, her glance as steady and open as his,
She answered evenly, "You will get the transportation you need, Mr. Wyatt." She saw a faint hint of astonishment in his face. This was not the manner or the answer he had expected. Perhaps it was what she had not said that astonished him most, that she offered no defense, no excuses. He took a moment to study her silently. Then he said, his voice less sharp, "All right. Thank you. Good day." She inclined her head. He bowed and left the office. "That's the story, Hank. I had worked out an almost impossible schedule to complete the Rio Norte line in 12 months. Now I'll have to do it in 9. You were to give us the rail over a period of 1 year. Can you give it to us within 9 months? If there's any human way to do it, do it. If not, I'll have to find some other means to finish it." Reardon sat behind his desk. His cold blue eyes made 2 horizontal cuts across the gaunt planes of his face. They remained horizontal, impassively half-closed. He said evenly, without emphasis, "I'll do it." Dagny leaned back in her chair. The short sentence was a shock. It was not merely relief. It was the sudden realization that nothing else was necessary to guarantee that it would be done. She needed no proofs, no questions, no explanations. A complex problem could rest safely on 3 syllables pronounced by a man who knew what he was saying. "Don't show that you're relieved." His voice was mocking. "Not too obviously." His narrowed eyes were watching her with an unrevealing smile. "I might think that I hold Taggart Transcontinental in my power." "You know that anyway." "I do. And I intend to make you pay for it." "I expect to." "How much?" $20 extra per ton on the balance of the order delivered after today." "Pretty steep, Hank. Is that the best price you can give me?" "No, but that's the one I'm going to get." "I could ask twice that and you'd pay it." "Yes, I would. And you could. But you won't." "Why won't I?" "Because you need to have the Rio Norte line built. It's your first showcase for Reardon Metal." He chuckled. "That's right. I'd like to deal with somebody who has no illusions about getting favors." "Do you know what made me feel relieved when you decided to take advantage of it?"
"What?"
"That I was dealing for once with somebody who doesn't pretend to give favors." His smile had a discernible quality now. It was enjoyment.
"You always play it open, don't you?" he asked.
"I've never noticed you doing otherwise."
"I thought I was the only one who could afford to."
"I'm not broke in that sense, Hank."
"I think I'm going to break you someday, in that sense."
"Why?"
"I've always wanted to."
"Don't you have enough cowards around you?"
"That's why I'd enjoy trying it, because you're the only exception."
"So you think it's right that I should squeeze every penny of profit I can out of your emergency?" "Certainly I'm not a fool. I don't think you're in business for my convenience."
"Don't you wish I were?"
"I'm not a moocher, Hank."
"Aren't you going to find it hard to pay?"
"That's my problem, not yours. I want that rail."
"At $20 extra per ton?"
"Okay, Hank."
"Fine.
You'll get the rail. I may get my exorbitant profits,
or Taggart Transcontinental may crash before I collect."
She said without smiling, "If I don't get that line built in 9 months, Taggart Transcontinental will crash."
"It won't, so long as you run it."
When he did not smile, his face looked inanimate. Only his eyes remained alive, active, with a cold, brilliant clarity of perception. But what he was made to feel by the things he perceived, no one would be permitted to know, she thought. Perhaps not even himself.
"They've done their best to make it harder for you, haven't they?" he said.
"Yes. I was counting on Colorado to save the Taggart system. Now it's up to me to save Colorado. 9 months from now, Dan Conway will close his road. If mine isn't ready, it won't be any use finishing it. You can't leave those men without transportation for a single day, let alone a week or a month. At the rate they've been growing, you can't stop them dead and then expect them to continue. It's like slamming brakes on an engine going 200 miles an hour.
I know.
I can run a good railroad.
I can't run it across a continent of sharecroppers who are not good enough to grow turnips successfully. I've got to have men like Ellis Wyatt to produce something to fill the trains I run. So I've got to give him a train and a track 9 months from now, if I have to blast all the rest of us into hell to do it. He smiled, amused. You feel very strongly about it, don't you?
Don't you?
He would not answer, but merely held the smile.
Aren't you concerned about it?
She asked, almost angrily. No.
Then you don't realize what it means?
I realize that I'm going to get the rail rolled and you're going to get the track laid in 9 months. She smiled, relaxing wearily and a little guiltily.
Yes, I know we will.
I know it's useless getting angry at people like Jim and his friends. We haven't any time for it. First, I have to undo what they've done. Then afterwards... She stopped, wondering, shook her head and shrugged. Afterwards, they won't matter. That's right, they won't. When I heard about that anti-dog-eat-dog business, it made me sick. But don't worry about the goddamn bastards.
The two words sounded shockingly violent, because his face and voice remained calm.
You and I will always be there to save the country from the consequences of their actions. He got up. He said, pacing the office, Colorado isn't going to be stopped. You'll pull it through. Then Dan Conway will be back, and others. All that lunacy is temporary. It can't last. It's demented, so it has to defeat itself. You and I will just have to work a little harder for a while, that's all. She watched his tall figure moving across the office.
The office suited him. It contained nothing but the few pieces of furniture he needed, all of them harshly simplified down to their essential purpose, all of them exorbitantly expensive in the quality of materials and the skill of design. The room looked like a motor held within the glass case of broad windows. But she noticed one astonishing detail. A vase of jade that stood on top of a filing cabinet. The vase was a solid, dark green stone carved into plain surfaces. The texture of its smooth curves provoked an irresistible desire to touch it. It seemed startling in that office, incongruous with the sternness of the rest. It was a touch of sensuality.
Colorado is a great place, he said. It's going to be the greatest in the country. You're not sure that I'm concerned about it. That state's becoming one of my best customers, as you ought to know if you take time to read the reports on your freight traffic.
I know, I've read them.
I've been thinking of building a plant there in a few years, to save them your transportation charges.
He glanced at her.
You'll lose an awful lot of steel freight if I do.
Go ahead, I'll be satisfied with carrying your supplies, and the groceries for your workers, and the freight of the factories that will follow you there. And perhaps I won't have time to notice that I've lost your steel. What are you laughing at?
It's wonderful.
What?
The way you don't react as everybody else does nowadays.
Still, I must admit that for the time being, you're the most important single shipper of Taggart Transcontinental.
Don't you suppose I know it?
So I can't understand why Jim...
She stopped. Tries his best to harm my business? Because your brother Jim is a fool.
He is. But it's more than that. There's something worse than stupidity about it.
Don't waste time trying to figure him out. Let him spit. He's no danger to anyone. People like Jim Taggart just clutter up the world.
I suppose so.
Incidentally, what would you have done if I'd said I couldn't deliver your rails sooner?
I would have torn up sidings or closed some branch line, any branch line, and I would have used the rails to finish the Rio Norte track on time.
He chuckled. That's why I'm not worried about Taggart Transcontinental. But you won't have to start getting rail out of old sidings. Not so long as I'm in business.
She thought suddenly that she was wrong about his lack of emotion. The hidden undertone of his manner was enjoyment. She realized that she had always felt a sense of light-hearted relaxation in his presence, and known that he shared it. He was the only man she knew to whom she could speak without strain or effort. This, she thought, was a mind she respected, an adversary worth matching. yet there had always been an odd sense of distance between them, the sense of a closed door. There was an impersonal quality in his manner, something within him that could not be reached. He had stopped at the window. He stood for a moment looking out. "Do you know that the first load of rail is being delivered to you today?" he asked. "Of course I know it. Come here." She approached him. He pointed silently. Far in the distance, beyond the mill structures, she saw a string of gondolas waiting on a siding. The bridge of an overhead crane cut the sky above them. The crane was moving. Its huge magnet held a load of rails glued to a disk by the sole power of contact. There was no trace of sun in the gray spread of clouds, yet the rails glistened, as if the metal caught light out of space. The metal was a greenish blue. The great chain stopped over a car, descended, jerked in a brief spasm, and left the rails in the car. The crane moved back in majestic indifference. It looked like the giant drawing of a geometrical theorem moving above the men and the earth. They stood at the window, watching silently, intently. She did not speak until another load of green-blue metal came moving across the sky. Then the first words she said were not about rail, track, or an order completed on time. She said, as if greeting a new phenomenon of nature, "Reardon metal." He noticed that, but said nothing. He glanced at her, then turned back to the window. "Hank, this is great."
"Yes."
He said it simply, openly. There was no flattered pleasure in his voice and no modesty. This, she knew, was a tribute to her, the rarest one person could pay another. The tribute of feeling free to acknowledge one's own greatness, knowing that it is understood. She said, "When I think of what that metal can do, what it will make possible. Hank, this is the most important thing happening in the world today, and none of them know it.
We know it."
They did not look at each other. They stood watching the crane. On the front of the locomotive in the distance, she could distinguish the letters T, T. She could distinguish the rails of the busiest industrial siding of the Taggart system. "As soon as I can find a plant able to do it," she said, "I'm going to order diesels made of Reardon metal."
"You'll need them."
"How fast do you run your trains on the Rio Norte track?"
"Now, we're lucky if we manage to make 20 miles an hour."
He pointed at the cars.
"When that rail is laid, you'll be able to run trains at 250 if you wish."
"I will in a few years, when we'll have cars of Reardon metal, which will be half the weight of steel and twice as safe."
"You'll have to look out for the airlines. We're working on a plane of Reardon metal. It will weigh practically nothing and lift anything. You'll see the day of long-haul heavy freight air traffic."
"I've been thinking of what that metal will do for motors, any motors, and what sort of thing one can design now."
"Have you thought of what it will do for chicken wire?"
"Just plain chicken wire fences made of Reardon metal that will cost a few pennies a mile and last 200 years. And kitchenware that will be bought at the dime store and passed on from generation to generation. And ocean liners that one won't be able to dent with a torpedo." "Did I tell you that I'm having tests made of communications wire of Reardon metal? I'm making so many tests that I'll never get through showing people what can be done with it and how to do it." They spoke of the metal and of the possibilities which they could not exhaust. It was as if they were standing on a mountaintop, seeing a limitless plain below and roads open in all directions. But they merely spoke of mathematical figures, of weights, pressures, resistances, costs. She had forgotten her brother and his national alliance. She had forgotten every problem, person, and event behind her. They had always been clouded in her sight, to be hurried past, to be brushed aside. Never final, never quite real. This was reality, she thought. This sense of clear outlines, of purpose, of lightness, of hope. This was the way she had expected to live. She had wanted to spend no hour and take no action that would mean less than this. She looked at him in the exact moment when he turned to look at her. They stood very close to each other. She saw in his eyes that he felt as she did. If joy is the aim and the core of existence, she thought,
and if that which has the power to give one joy is always guarded as one's deepest secret, then they had seen each other naked in that moment. He made a step back and said in a strange tone of dispassionate wonder, "We're a couple of blackguards, aren't we?"
"Why?"
"We haven't any spiritual goals or qualities. All we're after is material things. That's all we care for."